Retirement in America is set to change today. I'm David Brancaccio. The massive package of federal spending laws that gets to the president for signature today has been hailed as a remarkable bipartisan achievement, or a fiscal dumpster fire, depending on the perspective. It cancels three taxes that were there to offset the costs of Obamacare, and it does significantly update America's retirement system. Something called the SECURE Act is embedded in this. It makes it easier for smaller companies to band together to share the cost of setting up, say, a 401k. And there's more. Olivia Mitchell is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and executive director of the Pension Research Council. Morning to you.
Good day, sir.
The new law embraces a special form of investing where if you put in enough over the years, there's a guaranteed stream of income that isn't supposed to go up or down when markets go up or down. Annuities.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the right kind of annuities, low-cost annuities, and especially deferred annuities. That is, you can purchase lifetime income at a fairly young age and be guaranteed that you will never run out of money. That's a problem under the current system because even if you have a little bit of money in your 401k plan, you might mismanage it or you might simply live too long.
As you mentioned, the concern is there are lower fee annuities and then there are overly expensive ones.
I think that the place to start is to put forth some low-cost, plain vanilla annuities such that they provide a fixed income from now until you die.
And the plain vanilla ones, presumably, your presumption is, would be the ones with lower fees.
One of the reasons annuities get expensive is people want ratchets and markups and increases on their birthday and guarantees and death benefits and survivor benefits. All those things cost money.
Well, Professor, thank you for helping us with this. Olivia Mitchell is a professor at the Wharton School and executive director of the Pension Research Council. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The new law will also let companies add long-term part-time employees to retirement plans. Now, leading up to a Supreme Court ruling back in 2018, we did a lot of coverage of South Dakota versus Wayfair. That decision means online businesses have to collect sales tax. This is the first holiday shopping season with this new system. Here's Marketplace's Kimberly Adams.
Before the Supreme Court decision, many states relied on the honor system. People who purchased goods online were supposed to voluntarily pay their local sales tax. Not many people did. This year, expect to see that tax in your online shopping cart. Carl Davis is with the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy.
In the vast majority of states, if you're buying from a major retailer online, you will be paying sales tax this holiday season.
A few states don't have sales tax. Others have laws in the works. In the meantime, Veronique DeRuggi at the Mercatus Center says states aren't making that much more money.
Because a lot of the online purchases are done through Amazon and through big stores that were already collecting the sales tax.
Despite some estimates that states would gain tens of billions in revenue from online retailers, DeRuggi says the early indication is a much smaller bump of less than $4 billion. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Marketplace helps you answer questions you've always wondered about, and now that includes finding out more about how and why we do what we do every day. Become a Marketplace investor today, and you'll get exclusive access to a series of virtual AMAs featuring Molly Wood, Kai Rizdahl, and me, David Brancaccio. Don't miss out on our 2020 Ask Me Anything series. Contribute $60 or sign up to donate $5 a month at marketplace.org. And thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now, you look at a Christmas tree and maybe see a symbol of faith, tradition, or even consumerism, but maybe it's an economics lesson shaped like a Christmas tree. A guy I know went out Route 78 in New Jersey to cut down his tree, and strangely this year, the farm offered a binary choice in trees. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has a theory and some data. Hiya, Chris.
Hello, David.
So weirdly, this year, the choices are little dinky Charlie Brown Christmas tree or oversized, almost too big for the house Christmas trees. Nothing in between. Do you think that economics could be at play?
I think the law of supply and demand may be having a play here. Now, here's the thing, David. Typical growing time for a Christmas tree, a real Christmas tree, is about 10 years. So back 10 years ago when we had the Great Recession, less planting, understandably, right? You have less planting. We're now seeing that effect. Add that bad weather, and particularly some flooding in North Carolina. So you have reduced supply, and consumer spending is healthy. Consumers are making a decent amount of money, and so demand is up somewhat. Taken all together, you're seeing upward pressure on prices.
I mean, I grew up cutting the tree down in the Maine woods, but these days we have this fake twig little thing, like a delicate birch with little white lights. It's supposed to be calming and not busy. I mean, a lot of people go with artificial trees.
I was stunned at the number. I didn't realize that 82% of households, you know, it's artificial trees. And this is a nice example, David, of the economics of innovation. Because an artificial tree, they've gotten better looking over the years. They're convenient. They don't need to be watered. And you can store them easily. And I just sort of loved the reasoning by economist David Henderson. And he'd been buying a tree, and he just found it was costing close to $100 if you include tax. And then the time that it took to get the tree, $400 for an artificial tree plus tax. And he's figured out that, you know, the cost-benefit analysis is that the tree, this artificial tree, pays for itself in 3 to 4 years.
Cost-benefit analysis. I'm not feeling the holiday spirit at this juncture. But, you know, we also have to talk about environmental impact. Cutting a real tree down versus importing a plastic tree from China with all the carbon footprint that that implies.
The key point is, depends how long you have the artificial tree. As for 20 years or longer, then you can make a case that the economic impact is less than the real tree. But again, it's controversial. But here's the thing, David. Whether it's a real tree or it's an artificial tree, the environmental impact is small. So just enjoy it, whichever choice you make.
All right. Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.